You know, when you're looking for a home, sometimes you find some really, really good opportunities, some really good prices and what you get for the money. And you're just like, how is this even possible? This doesn't make any sense. Well, did you ever consider maybe it's haunted? That's exactly what happened to a family in a recent EPP bonus episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you want to hear about it, then click Become an EPP on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Your support by being an EPP of only $5 a month helps keep our show on the air, covers all those hard costs we have of distributing this show. We greatly appreciate it. Without our EPPs, this show would not continue. So if you want it to continue, please consider supporting it on the website, Real Ghost Stories Online. Click Become an EPP. Get all our bonus episodes and more. Thank you very much for your support. Check it out, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And that indeed it is. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again for more real ghost stories from real people. It's all stuff that you guys called in today. Get some good stories to share. Phone number is 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost stories with us. I would like to thank one of our listeners, Albert. He sent me a little prize.
And you've been wearing it all afternoon.
It's a gift is what I should say. It's just me hanging around our three-year-old for far too much time because everything that's a gift is now a special prize, according to her.
Instead of surprise, it's special prize.
It's special prize. So it's like, you know, are we going to get a soda at the gas station? Can we get a special prize? A soda? Everything is a special prize. So now I'm referring to this as a special prize. Oh, yes. That's what having kids will do to you. You change your vocabulary. Anyhow, it's a gift. He sent me this wonderful Krampus scarf. And I'm holding it up as if I have a camera in here right now, which I don't. But I did share it earlier in the week on our Facebook page in a little video. So if you want to see that, you can see it. So thank you, Albert. He works at a store where they are selling these fine items. And he thought of us.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked in an email. He's like, hey, can I send you one of those? And I said, I would love it. And I would wear it proudly all Christmas season long. So
I bet it's more like all year.
In the middle of July when it's like 90. Yeah. Why is that man wearing a Krampus scarf? He's kind of odd. I love it. So thank you, Albert, for that. That's really cool. Love little things like that. Special prizes, if you will. Phone number is 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost stories with us. As you know, we would love to hear them here on the show. We call Real Ghost Stories Online. You can also write into the website at realghoststoriesonline.com. So lots of ways to get those stories to us. Let's go to our first caller here today. It's Claire, it looks like, in Alabama. Hi, Claire.
Hi, guys. I'm Claire. I don't live there now, but I'm from Alabama. And the story I'm about to share takes place in the suburb of Alabama. In Mountain Brook, and I called just last week with a story, and I've been listening to the show. I called last week soon after I started listening to the show. I don't know if there's like an etiquette thing of like how often to call. I feel like I'm like flooding your mailbox, but I said in my previous message that I'm a skeptic, which I still am, but also that the experience I shared then was the only thing I'd ever experienced. And the more I listen to your show, the more these things are coming back to me, weird happenings that I excused, you know, that I wrote off one way or another, or just put out of my mind. And I wanted to call in and share this one, pretty short one. It's actually there's two short parts of it. But I was living in an apartment complex in Mountain Brook, Alabama, right near English Village. If anybody's familiar with the area, they know what that is. As soon as I moved into this apartment, like, first of all, they're old buildings, big brick buildings, gorgeous plaster walls with cracks all in them, radiator heat, AC units in the windows, hardwood floors, just gorgeous buildings. I loved those apartments. I lived there for 2 years in two different apartments. First one was two bedroom with a roommate. Second one was by myself. We'll get to that in a second. But the one I lived in by myself, I think this is an interesting story because I didn't see anything. It was nothing I saw. It was only smell. It was a purely olfactory possible ghost story. I don't know. As soon as we moved in there, I started waking up in the middle of the night smelling smoke. The smell of smoke would wake me up, and I would think that something was on fire in my apartment or in one next to me. And it was so strong, and it lasted after I woke up. I would sit up in bed, sniff the air, smell the smoke, walk through my apartment trying to figure out what was burning. I'd even go out into the hall, sniff the stairwell, you know, look around, like sniff the doors of the other apartments. Could never find anything burning, never heard of any fires. And this would happen frequently, not necessarily every night, but at least 3 times a week, I'd be woken up by the smell of smoke. You know, I got up and checked around for the first many times, and eventually it got to the point this kept happening, and I was thinking, do I have a brain tumor? This is weird. And, you know, that question was never answered for me. Also, these apartments, there were no fireplaces or anything. You know, I'm sure some people burned candles, but this was just such a strong smell of smoke. And the only thing I can think of to explain it, maybe, is that these apartments were built on the grounds of a tuberculosis sanatorium that I believe was erected in 1910. It was tents at that point. They didn't have a building. It was all tents. I think that it was the first TB sanatorium in Alabama, and it was built to deal with the TB outbreak that was happening there at the time. There was a historical marker out on the road out front, which is why I know this, and I've tried to look into it since then and find things out about it, but it turns out the consensus is very little is known about this makeshift TB sanatorium. And so I know a lot of people died there, surely. I don't know what they did with the bodies. Maybe they burned them. At least the ones that weren't claimed. I don't know. It could be also previous tenants, because countless tenants have lived there, I'm sure. But it was just so weird waking up to the smell of smoke constantly. And then in the second apartment, well, actually, the first apartment, that was the second apartment that I was living in by myself. The first one I was living in with my best friend, who was my roommate. And in that one, there was just this really weird, I don't know if this is ghostly as much as it is sci-fi. There was like a sound vortex or something happening there. In our living room, we had a TV, and we were sitting, like, the couch is like 6 or 8 feet away from the TV. We had to turn it on max volume all the way up in order to hear it, and still wished we could turn it up more. There was just a weird quality of sound in that place, and there's no reason for it. There was no muffling. It was hardwood floors, pretty much bare walls other than a few pictures. We didn't have a rug or anything in there. Just pretty bare, you know, college student dorm room attire, but we could not hear the TV in this place. And the weird thing was, when you would come in downstairs into the hallway, and our apartment was on the second floor, which was the top floor, you would come in downstairs and you could hear the TV crystal clear, super loud. You would walk up the stairs in the hallway outside the apartment, right outside the door to the apartment, to the room that the TV was in, you could hear it crystal clear, super loud. And as soon as you walked into the apartment, it was muted and muffled. It was so soft, you couldn't hear it anymore. Our neighbors would complain all the time about the volume, but we couldn't hear anything unless we turned it up to 12. And I could never explain it. It was just really weird. It was also a dead zone for cell phones. In order to get a signal, you would have to pretty much go stand against a wall, an exterior wall to the apartment. The best place was at the very end of the kitchen, by the window there. But I could get a cell signal when I was, like, sitting up in bed against an exterior wall. If you were in the interior of the apartment proper, nothing. You couldn't get anything. No cell signal, no anything. And I don't know. It was just really weird that it was still localized, that right outside the door, you could hear the television just blaringly loud, and as soon as you walk in, nothing. I don't have any tie-in to that and the previous TV sanatorium there, but just some really weird occurrences that happened at that apartment complex. Again, I never saw anything that I can remember. It was just that one thing, smelling smoke, and this other thing with the weird sound muffling properties. That's pretty much it. I would love to hear what you think about this. I'm still working my way through the back catalog of your episodes, so I don't know if anybody else has called in with an olfactory haunting or, you know, an auditory or lack of auditory haunting. But I'm really interested to hear what you guys think. But keep up the good fight. Love the podcast. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for sharing your stories with us here at Real Ghost Stories Online. On the first part of the story with the old TB tent hospital and the lack of information that is available about it, that is rather questionable.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's speculation, but I could see it, you know, in cruder times when bad shit's going down. Yeah, I could see there being some burning going on.
Yeah.
With just, you know, that's what you needed to do. You know, maybe. I'm assuming so without a whole lot of medical ways of containing such a disease.
You mean once they've passed
once away. They've passed.
Sure.
Yeah, not like living. Right?
I was going to say, you just torch the
no,
sick people?
No, you don't torch the sick people.
Okay.
No, like once the body is passed, you're cremated, and this is just my guess and speculation without knowing a ton about that specific story or that specific place, and maybe someone else can enlighten us, but I'm assuming if you have a lot of people dying at one time and you don't really have a hospital to begin with, so you don't necessarily have a crematorium, that probably was somewhat of a common practice.
And on the paranormal side of that, you know, smoke and the smell of smoke is one of those that we hear quite often.
Mm-hmm.
That is a fairly common, you know, unexplainable
sure.
smell.
Yeah.
And, you know, it most of the time does have a story that goes along with it. Like in this case, now with it being a tent TB hospital, she said that there was like a roadside historical marker that, you know, I guess kind of validated the existence of that.
Sure.
So, I don't know. That's crazy.
I mean, there's so many of these, you know, we hear stories of actual structural hospitals that were, you know, essentially state-type hospitals of some sort, or eventually, or were a TB hospital for a long period of time and then abandoned, and so many stories of those being very, very haunted, either the grounds or what is left of the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So, it doesn't surprise me if this is a makeshift thing. A lot of very, you know, tragic things happened on those grounds all these years later. I'd imagine that, you know, it doesn't matter if it was in a tent or in a building, It's about where it happened.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is. Second part of the story, that's very odd with the sound being very loud in the hallways, and yet where it's coming out of, it's not for being very loud at all.
I was wondering what your take on that was going to be, because you know so much more about sound and what can help muffle it and what can help, you know, make it be louder than it actually is.
You know, there's a lot of like audio geeks out there that may be able to explain that, you know, better than I can. And if you're going to talk paranormal on it, the only thing I can think of is, and we've heard this before, of when there's paranormal things going on, sometimes people are trying to communicate and they can't hear each other across a room or right in front of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to go paranormal, I'd say maybe there's something that's literally absorbing the sound within where they're at. And outside of it, it's not being absorbed. It's going out at the volume it should be going at it if something is cranked to 12. If we're talking from a purely physical standpoint of sound waves and stuff, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something weird with the structure of that room, of that apartment, because mm-hmm. it was an apartment, correct?
Yes.
So maybe there's something with that where essentially the room itself became its own subwoofer.
Oh.
And the way it's structurally engineered, the sounds on the inside, it's bouncing out, and it's, for whatever reason, it reverberates on the walls much stronger than it does with much more intensity and like a bass intensity than what they're getting in their own area.
Okay.
That's all I can think of.
Okay.
As I choke over here. Sorry, got a little bit of a cold. I don't know. I mean, that's an odd one. I had an apartment where I think the woman was just a crazy lady that lived below me who hated the world and everything in it. And, because she was never very happy. But I never really made much noise in the apartment I had. I mean, I could walk across my floor and she would hit the broom to the ceiling. And it's like, I'm walking to the kitchen. I wasn't like stomping. I wasn't doing anything. I mean, and even just watching TV at a normal, quiet volume too. Because
mm-hmm.
I never really crank up TV. I'm just not, I don't like that.
No.
So it doesn't, I don't know, it's very rare that I ever had anything loud. It would be constantly banging on the ceiling and just cursing I could hear downstairs.
You know, and you're not a particularly hard walker. You know, some people just, they walk really hard and make a lot of noise, even though they're not stomping.
So I don't know. I mean, I also know that apartment I lived in had paper thin walls because I had another neighbor on the other side of me who, whenever him and his girlfriend were together, you could certainly understand what was going on in that vicinity.
Oh, gosh.
The weird part is, like, I had moved away from this town for a while, came back to this town. And I knew this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I had like worked with him years ago. We were in the same grade, but he went to a different school. So I mean, I kind of knew him.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say we're acquaintances, borderline friends. But like, it's been so many years, we didn't really know each other much at that point anymore. Other than, oh, hey, it's you. You know, like our moms worked together within the school and everything. And it got to the point where it was like, you're not going to believe what I'm hearing in my house.
Awkward.
So it got, it was like, gosh, I hope this doesn't happen when my parents come over and visit.
Oh, gosh.
That could be a little odd. So, anyhow, I blame the building for just having very poor acoustics.
Okay.
In my case, but I don't know what the case was in that other one. Very interesting story, though. Thank you for sharing that. 855-853-4802 is the phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to Rick in California. Hi.
Hey, guys. Rick calling in from Los Angeles. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I'd love to tell my story, hopefully, to get on the air. It's a little bit troubling, and it's a little bit confusing to me, but seeing that you guys are the experts, it might be of some fascination. Maybe you might be able to clear it up for me. As of the last month or so, I've been attentively researching the topic of astral projection, sleep paralysis, lucid dreaming and of the sort. I'm kind of fascinated by it. No relation to watching your show, believe me, I'm in love with your show. And in doing some of this research, I came across some practices that I've been trying out every night when I go to sleep. Nothing crazy, just like mental checkpoints that I go through just to try to get lucid dreaming down and so on and so forth. But as of recently, last few weeks, I've been successfully going through my checklist. However, I've been ending up in a sleep paralysis state. And it wasn't until about a week or so ago that this sleep paralysis state kind of turned into, how should I say, a little bit more than just your standard waking up in the middle of the night and being paralyzed. So since I've started this practice, I've had about almost 2 weeks, as I said, of consistently waking up somewhere between, I would say, 3 a.m. and, I don't know, as late as like 4:30 a.m. In a sleep paralysis state. And usually it doesn't last more than a few seconds, and I just kind of go back to sleep because I'm kind of aware of what's going on. But for the last week or so, I've been getting things like feeling my bed shaking. I've opened my eyes to my room being completely white. And I don't mean like a bright light is on. It's almost as if like I'm in a mist. It's really strange. Like imagine yourself outside in the heart of a really foggy night. You just can't see anything but the fog, kind of like that. And as of 3 nights ago, I woke up and I noticed that there was my room was completely normal. There was nothing else, nothing crazy, and I was kind of relieved because I thought, okay, this is just a standard sleep paralysis state and everything will be going back to normal shortly. However, from the side of my bed, because I was sleeping on my back, from my right side, emerged a figure from the ground, and almost as if they would stand up, just like somebody was lying down, and they just stood up next to me. And I was, you know, paralyzed, and I couldn't do anything, and I was just kind of moving my eyeballs and looking at them. And this guy stood up, and I say it's a guy because, I mean, he didn't have features. It was just kind of a silhouette. And it was really bizarre. He raised his left arm as if to wave at me, but instead of waving, he extended his left arm in front of him and started gesturing over my body, like almost kind of like following his arm from my head to my feet, but with his hand extended in front of me, almost like he was kind of like registering me or trying to, I don't know, it was really bizarre. He was just kind of hovering his arm over me. And I started to get really freaked out as I was watching this, and it happened. And it seemed like it was a long time, but I mean, I'm guessing it lasted for maybe 5 seconds, 6 seconds, and this thing just kind of knelt down and went back into the ground as if like nothing happened. And the second he did that, like my sleep paralysis almost instantaneously just went away, and I was able to move again. And I kind of had to sit up and leave my bedroom and go to the kitchen and have a glass of water. But since then, as I said, this was 2, maybe 3 nights ago, I had a family friend come over to the house. And, you know, I'm not a particularly religious person, but they came to the house and the topic came up, and I was kind of speaking with her about it. And just off the top of my head, she's a very religious person, I asked her to go into my room and maybe see if she could sense anything or feel anything. And she was a little bit apprehensive, but she did it. She gave me the benefit of the doubt and went into my room. And I thought she was going to be in there for a minute, maybe 2 minutes tops. What was she going to do in there? But like 2 minutes went by, 3 minutes went by, 5 minutes went by, she's still in there. I'm standing behind my closed door with my ear to the door trying to hear what the heck's going on, and it sounds like she's mumbling. And maybe 5 minutes later, she opens the door, dead face, just looking at me. And she just says, "Oh, there's nothing in your room, don't worry about it." And it was really bizarre. But I mean, like I said in the earlier portion of this recording, I have had sleep paralysis consistently every night since I've tried these, tried going down my checklist. And since she did that, I haven't had sleep paralysis. So I don't know what she did, but it worked. And I just hope she didn't do anything to, you know, maybe she angered something, maybe she didn't. Maybe I was just having, you know, standard sleep paralysis, and this was just like a hallucination. But I'd love to get your take on it. Hopefully you can kind of help me clear this all up in my head. Well, I appreciate it. Again, love your show. You guys do a great job. Keep it up. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Do you think maybe she somehow was able to entice whatever it was to leave, and that's why you're not having the sleep paralysis anymore? Or do you think it's just going to lie low for a little while and come back?
With something like that, it's hard to tell. I think there may be something to the enticing to leave, but sometimes you have these, you know, stories where we get, it's like, hey, I haven't had anything happen for a long time, and all of a sudden, shit just started hitting the fan again. And it seems really similar to like what happened to me X amount of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it kind of goes and it kind of comes. And I think sometimes some people are targets, if you will. And, you know, where it's something that will come, you know, back to you when the moment is right. And not being like the moment right as like, hey, things are peachy keen and great with something like this, but more so like, oh, they're kind of vulnerable right now. This is a good state to mm-hmm. show back up at.
Yeah.
So I think something like that, only time will really tell.
I can't help but wonder also if with worrying about sleep paralysis happening at night, inadvertently causing that mm-hmm. to happen, and then once, you know, the friend said, you don't have anything in here, there's nothing to worry about, that can be reassuring enough to where you're not having that thought of mm-hmm. what if it happens, just long enough that you can stay in a normal sleep state.
Sure.
I don't know.
It really, I think, depends on the person, too. How much you're going to overanalyze it in your mind and go over and over and like, is this going to happen, you know?
Oh, like you and me?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people can just let things go and not be plagued by them. Others can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So thank you for the call. Thank you for sharing that story. Let's go to another caller. Hi.
Hi, this is Lola calling in from Los Angeles. I've called in a couple of times before. I called in about the haunted swimming pool at my high school and a bunch of other stuff. The one that I had completely forgotten that I had not shared with you, it actually involved an acting school that I went to. And on today's episode, I heard from someone who's currently running the costume department at that exact same school. So I thought I'd call in with my own stories about the ghost that we think is Charlie Chaplin, because I have also had experiences with him. Basically, everybody knew. I went to the school in 2004. I was there for 3 years and was in the theater company in my third year, which is just a handful of people, and we just do plays. We don't have normal classes anymore. We just do plays. And this was in 2006. And I had my first encounters with Charlie once I was in the third year program. The first time that I noticed something was off was some friends of mine who worked in the library would tell me they would hear people walking around after everyone had gone home. And I thought every theater claims to have a ghost, but it's probably not true. And then when I was in third year, I was in a play. And I was not in most of the play. I had a small part. So I had a scene at the beginning, and then I was done. So one night, I was off stage from my scene, and like the caller said, there is a hallway, a breezeway that connects the theater to the green room, which is one of the old bungalows. And I went down the hallway into the green room and decided I was just going to sit down and read a book and chill out. I didn't want to watch the rest of the play. And I was just going to wait. And because I was only in one scene, every other character was on stage. Everybody was busy watching the play or doing the play. So I was the only one in there. And I started reading a book. It was a collection of ghost stories. And I started feeling like somebody was watching me. And it just got stronger and stronger and stronger until I decided, you know what, I'm kind of creeped out. I'm just going to go back in and watch the rest of the play from backstage. And to give you a little bit of further detail, when you go down the hallway to get to the theater, there's a door to the theater itself that can be locked, so you can't get through from the green room. And because this door had a tendency to swing shut, which comes into play a little later, they would, if there were a lot of entrances and exits, prop it open with the door. And we just had to remember to not close the door, or it could lock and then actors wouldn't be able to get backstage and it would be this whole thing. So I remember vividly being the only one there and walking through this door to the backstage area and having the door propped open. And then at the end of Act One, when everybody comes off stage and tries to go into the green room, we walk backstage, the lights were down, the audience left for intermission, and the door was locked. The chair had been moved, the door was locked, and this was we realized as we were testing this door that it didn't swing shut easily, which we had all assumed had been the problem. It was actually pretty difficult to get it to swing shut. And everybody started blaming me, and they said, who was the last one through here? We had to wait for the stage manager to come all the way around to let us out. And if you've ever been in a play, and you've been on stage for an hour and a half, you know, everybody needs a snack or they need to go to the bathroom. And so everyone was kind of cranky. And I said, no, it was open when I came through here. And the door had a little bit of a squeak to it. So if it had closed, you would have heard the metal chair move and the door squeak. But basically the door had just moved the chair and closed itself without anybody hearing it. And we were all a little annoyed more than anything because it's a mean trick to play on a bunch of actors, which Charlie Chaplin would well know. And so we just made sure to keep an eye on that in the future and would actually, it became kind of a joke to, before we would go on stage, to ask Charlie to leave, you know, to let the play go on as intended. And that was my only experience for the rest of that year. However, the next year I came back to help stage manage for the play that the third years were doing that next season. And it involved a lot of quick changes. So I was helping out with costumes and we were doing a rehearsal. So no one was in the theater and it was just the actors and the director of the third year company and myself and my friend Leilani. And she and I were doing costumes and assisting with the stage managing. And all of the actors left the stage to go back to the green room to get ready for Act Two of this rehearsal day. And someone couldn't find a hat that they needed for Act Two. So me and Leilani said, okay, well, we'll go back into the theater and we'll find the hat. You guys just continue like talking amongst yourselves. So we walked into the theater, which had nobody in it. The lights in the audience were dimmed, but there weren't a lot of lights. We didn't have the lights on backstage because we weren't doing a full run. So it was pretty dark back there. And I said, okay, I'll check the costume rack on one side. And Leilani went to the other side of the stage. And it was very dark. So I was going through all of these props, and I got down on my knees, and I had my head under a rack of clothing and was digging through looking for this hat when I clearly heard, absolutely heard, somebody briskly but casually walk all the way around from the other side of backstage up behind me. And it was so real that I automatically assumed it was Leilani. And so without even looking up, it wasn't like I thought I heard something and I stood up and decided it was footsteps. It was so obviously a person calmly just walking around backstage that without even leaning back, I started to answer her, and I started to say, oh, did you find the hat? But I didn't get the sentence finished, because as I sat up, I said, oh, did you get the... And I realized there was no one there. I was completely alone. So I asked, you know, out loud to the other side of the stage. I thought maybe it echoed. So I said, Leilani, are you in here? And I didn't hear anything. So I walked across to the other side of the stage. She wasn't there. I walked all the way back to the green room, and she was already back in the green room. And I said, were you just in the theater? And she said, no, I checked really fast, but the hat wasn't there. So I came back to the green room, and I said, because somebody just walked up behind me, and there's no one in that theater. And everybody kind of stopped and said, ugh, that's super creepy. And I said, I know, that's pretty intense. But it didn't feel menacing. It just felt like somebody was coming over to see what was going on. It felt like someone very curious was just coming to watch this girl flailing around on the ground trying to find a hat, which I'm sure, as someone in the industry, and this used to be a film studio, he's probably very familiar with. So I like to think he was coming over to see how I was doing finding the hat. So that's it for my stories. Like I said, I knew people that saw things in the library. Fun fact, I worked in the costume shop that is mentioned in the story for exactly 2 days before I was fired, because I was not very reliable in those days at working. But I never saw anything in the costume shop, but it definitely had a strange vibe, and I can confirm her story that it would be very difficult for that door to close itself, because I've never seen that in my entire life. And that's it for my stories. I'm kind of hoping that other people that went to that school will come forward with some of their own after hearing ours, so I can hear more. And I also liked hearing that the director of the company, who I know well, saw a man in that theater and never told me when I had to be there alone, which is kind of mean. But that's it. And I'm hoping that I hear more people tell stories about that conservatory. And thanks for putting amazing stories on the air. Have a good day, guys.
It would be kind of difficult if you're going to ask someone to work like odd hours alone. Be like, okay, well, it's all you now. I'm going to head out. Oh, and by the way, this shit is really haunted.
Unless you're just an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably say something like that to someone. Like, okay, have a good one. I'm going to go have an all-star burger at Hardee's while you deal with the ghost.
Okay.
So that'd be a little creepy.
I like it when we have multiple callers about the same place, mm-hmm. and hear, you know, their different experiences about presumably the same spirit.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I love the location stories too, where all these people have because it goes to kind of show you, because most of these people don't know each other.
Sure,
they were there for a point in their life, and they're somewhere else now, and a lot of them tend to be in different parts of the country, but they all have the similar story. So yeah, so the folks are like, I don't know if I quite believe in ghosts. Explain that.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one of those where it's like, that's a little bit too convenient.
Yeah.
You know, there's something going on. 855-853-4802, our number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your story. Hi.
Hi, Tony. Hi, Jenny. First off, let me say I love the show. I'm an EPP, and I think that the EPP episodes have some really awesome stories. So if anybody's thinking about it, do it. I've written in before, and you guys have read my stories. But I've never called in before, so this is new. And I'm hoping I won't be nervous and I won't talk too fast, and that you guys will like the story. On an earlier podcast, you had asked for people to call in with experiences during house hunting or, you know, being in a house. And I'm not a realtor, but I do have an experience from when my parents were house hunting. They got tired of living in the city and they wanted to moved to the suburbs, and they wanted to kind of live near me, so they were looking in my area, and I kind of just invited myself along to the showings. So we went to this little house in the next town, and it was small. It was a ranch style with a crawl space, but it was really, really well maintained. The outside was clean, the lawn was manicured, and the inside was just really warm. It was furnished. So it wasn't creepy in any way. It was really nice, actually. So we're walking around, and
they were looking at the bathroom, and I was like, I need to go in this bedroom. So I went in there, and it was set up like a guest room. There was a bed, a small dresser, and a closet, and I needed to open that closet door. I needed to look on the floor. I just had this thing that was pulling me, drawing me there. So I opened the closet door, and there's a few sweaters in there, and on the bottom is a box with some board games. And I move the box, and I lift up the carpet there, and there's the door to the crawl space, but it was locked. So I put everything back, and I rejoined my parents, and they're looking at the other rooms. And my dad asked about the crawl space, and before the realtor could say anything, I said, oh, I found it. It's in this first bedroom over here, but the door is locked. So the realtor went, and she had the door, or the key for the main door, and she thought maybe that would work. So she tried it, and it didn't work. So she was going to call the listing agent. As she was dialing her phone, I tell my mom, you need to ask what happened to the owner or why they're selling. And my mom looks at me with this kind of funny look and goes, well, why? And I said, because the owner died. So my mom gives me this kind of like raised eyebrow look, but she asked her agent if she knew, and her agent said, no, I don't know, but I'll ask when I ask about the key. So called the listing agent but got the voicemail and just left a message. And so we continue to look outside, and we come back in, and all of a sudden I just knew. And I said, look on the hat rack under the straw hat, the key to the crawl space is there. So our agent kind of gave me this strange look, and she was headed towards the hat rack, which was right by the front door. And there were five little pegs, and there was a coat, like a windbreaker, and a couple of baseball caps, and then on the end there was a straw hat. Before she reached it, though, her phone rang, and it was the listing agent. So our agent asked, you know, hey, why is the house up for sale? And she looked at us, and her face kind of froze. And then she said, well, where's the key to the crawl space? It's locked. And we couldn't hear what the other agent was saying, but our agent's face kind of said it all, and her mouth just kind of dropped open, and she would not take her eyes off me. And she went and she picked up the straw hat, and sure enough, the key was there. So our agent said thanks and hung up, and she was addressing my mom, but she was looking straight at me, and she said, the owner died, and her kids are selling the house as part of the estate deal. And then all of them started looking at me, and I just excused myself and went out of the house and said, I'll see you guys when you're done. So they looked at the crawl space, and they came out, and they said it wasn't creepy or anything. It was just weird. So my mom asked me, did you see a note? Did you see, you know, any kind of instructions anywhere? And I said, no, there was nothing. I just knew. And she's like, well, how did you know? And I said, I don't know how I knew. I could feel that that's where it was. It was almost like it wasn't there, and then poof, it was there. The college was there. So my parents did not end up buying that house, not because of that, but they ended up finding a house they liked more. But they insisted on bringing me to all of their showings just in case there were any more messages. So like I said, it wasn't a scary story. It's kind of funny. That was kind of a new one. I do feel things sometimes, like when I go into something and I just feel like you're not alone. But I didn't have that feeling there. It wasn't creepy. It was just strange. Really warm, really comforting. I think they probably could have been happy in that house too. So that's my story. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I am an EPP, and I love those episodes. Keep up the great work, and thank you. And I hope you guys take care. Bye.
Nothing like freaking out your real estate agent.
No, I was really hoping that they were going to open up the crawl space and find something just like a murder weapon or something.
Crawl spaces are creepy places.
I don't know that I've ever really been in one.
No? Like a true crawl space?
No.
There's one at my parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to like go through this little window to get into it, like by the driveway. It's very odd.
Huh.
It's a very awkward place to like get. I think my dad said to go down like once or twice. I don't even know what's in there, honestly, because all of the like utilities and stuff for the house are in like the laundry area in the basement.
Yeah.
So I suppose maybe that's where there's some duct work or something going on. If you need to get, I know he's gone in there once when I was much younger, and it's a tight squeeze.
See, the houses I've ever had either had no basement and were built on just concrete slabs.
Sure.
Or had a full basement. So there was never that in-between area where you could have a crawl space.
It makes for a real, real fun time.
Oh, sounds like it.
I don't think I'd really want... I don't think we have a... We really... Unless you want to consider the rafters between the basement and the first floor and the only above ground floor in our house a crawl space. I don't think that really counts, though.
I don't think that counts. They tend to really can't get in there.
Yeah, I mean, you'd really have to be a tiny person to snake through the rafters.
It'd be a Harper crawl space.
Yeah, you'd have to be like a cat or Harper, yeah. One of the two. 855-853-4802 is our number. Hi.
Hi, Tony and Jen. First off, I want to say that I love your show. I love what you do. I especially like the episode where you had your little ones on there. They're so sweet and precious. And my story is about what I would consider divine intervention. I went through a really rough period in my 20s. I ended up back at my parents' house. I lost my husband. And I spent the night at a casino. And this was a bad habit I had. I would go out and get really intoxicated, and it was out in the sticks. It was out in the country, and I would take the back roads home. And I know at the time it was terrible to drink and drive, and I was in a completely bad frame of mind. So one night I went to the casino and I had a lot to drink. And I was woken up by someone knocking on my car window. And I was surprised when I woke up that I was still in my car. I didn't understand why I wasn't at home in bed. And I was freezing. There was snow on the ground. I didn't have my coat on. My keys were in my CD player, which I don't know how I stuck them in my CD player, but I was a couple blocks from my house at a group mailbox, and a police officer was out in the country, and he saw my car there, and he saw that someone was inside, and he attempted to wake me up, and I really believe that I probably would have froze to death that night. And the officer said that someone sent him to me because he said that there was no reason for him to be out, way out in the country like that. But something told him when he was driving that night, way like 5 miles to the interstate, to the highway. He said something told him, turn here. You need to turn this way and go this way. And he said he couldn't believe it, that he was driving out in the country wondering what he was doing there. And then he saw my car. And then he said he was even more surprised when he saw a young woman in it. And he said, he had never seen someone close to freezing to death like that, but he woke me up. He warmed me up in his car. He didn't write me a ticket. He didn't arrest me. He just scooped me up, warmed me up, and took me home. And I just want to share that. You have a terrific show. I listen to you all the time. I listen to you at night before I fall asleep. I don't know how actually, the podcast gets stopped at a certain point. It's kind of funny because I'll wake up and the podcast will be stopped halfway through in the morning. And I feel like someone's actually saying, okay, she's asleep. Let's stop it right here so she can listen to the rest in the morning. I know that sounds crazy, but it's funny. I always wonder, how does the podcast get shut off halfway through when I fall asleep listening to it? Anyways, keep up the good work. I'm an EPP, and it's worth every penny. Bye-bye.
It's the ghost stopping it.
You think so?
I don't know.
I think something's looking out for her.
Certainly. Yeah. On the story, yeah.
On the story, maybe just in general.
Maybe even the podcast. You're helping there too.
Yeah, helpful spirit.
Yeah, I could see that being the case. I mean, especially with the actual elements of the story itself.
Yeah.
So I agree. Very good story. Thank you for sharing that with us. 855-853-4802 is the phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. We would love to hear it. So lots of ways to get your stories to us here at Real Ghost Stories Online. And that wraps up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you enjoy the show, please consider becoming an EPP. As you heard many of our callers say they are and how much they enjoy it, you too can get the same enjoyment out of it as well. This is where I'd like to use some as seen on TV lines, but I can't think of any right now. It seals better than ever before.
I'm not helping you with
this. That doesn't really apply.
Sorry.
Set it and forget it. Hey, that kind of applies to that last lady. Where she played the podcast and it stopped.
Oh, sure.
Set it, that was the Ronco food. That was the rotisserie grill, I think.
I don't know.
You just set it and forget it. Support the show. Please help us stay on the air. Become an EPP. It's only $5 a month. I can't throw in any free juicers, but you get like 60-some episodes. So enjoy that. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.